It's the weekend, time for rest, relaxation, and another edition of New Wisco Weekend, a weekly look at issues, arts, entertainment, culture, and everything that makes New Wisco home. Now, here's your host, Northeast Wisconsin News Bureau Chief, Lisa Hale.
On today's episode, art provides the inspiration. Our cover story is an interview with the new executive director of the Oshkosh Public Museum, Anna Canizzo. Todd Michaels has a conversation with local rapper Lil L.A. Mars, and Terry Barr catches up with blues artist Paul Filipowicz. Conrad Krieger interviews an artist with a passion for painting Green Bay. It's not your imagination. Mosquitoes have been bad this year, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot tells us why. And Amanda Nimmer provides commentary on therapeutic art. All coming up on New Wisco Weekend. In the wide outside. We open up this edition of New Wisco Weekend, which is focusing on the arts, with support for those who play musical instruments. Did you know a new trumpet can cost $1,500? A violin or a fiddle can cost $2,000. One Green Bay area high school band director will be able to supply some of those instruments, all thanks to the Barry Manilow Project. Yes, Barry Manilow. Terry Barr joins me with more.
Thanks, Lisa. Barry Manilow's popular song, Can't Smile Without You, actually showcased smiles all around during his concert in New Wisco. And all because Bayport High School band director Ashley Segrist is receiving a $10,000 grant for her program. I talked with Terry Charles of PMI Entertainment and the Rush Center to learn how this all played out.
Barry Manilow has been huge throughout his career on helping get instruments into schools. So the Manilow Music Project, which is his foundation, not what he does when he goes to markets, and Green Bay being one of them, and he also was in Milwaukee recently. What he does is he wants to get a teacher contest going. So in every market, get 10 music teachers. Now, these are band teachers because it's obviously instruments. These are not vocal teachers. Get them in a contest, get them nominated, then get the school districts behind them, and then have the kids, the students, the parents, fellow teachers, get them to vote for their favorite teacher. So at the end of the day, out of the 10 teachers, the one that gets the most votes and then gets a $10,000 grant from the Manilow Music Project.
Amazing.
It's so cool. Besides the $10,000, which they knew, they said the winning teacher and the 9 guests will get to meet Barry Manilow backstage.
Gosh.
Yeah, and I got to be part of that as well, so that was cool. But the thing I couldn't tell the rest of them is all the other teachers who at least entered, even if they didn't win, they were going to get 10 tickets to the show as well.
Oh, my gosh.
So such a cool thing.
So would you say it worked in this case?
I've been involved in a lot of neat things over the years, and he was so cool with the teacher and the guest backstage that it was certainly one of the coolest things that I've had a chance to be involved in my long career at the Rush Center.
I am talking with Terry Charles. He is with PMI Entertainment in Green Bay and the Rush Center. What do you think amazes you so much about this kind of support for students?
We've heard over the years of funding issues for public schools. It's been an ongoing process. And even where I live here, there's, you know, school referendums going on and on for maintenance and extracurricular activities. And certainly, I think, I'm not saying that band or music is the first one to get cut. Barry Manilow has said, you know, being a musician and you play an instrument and you learn that and that discipline and you have this, you know, group of kids together. Ashley Segrist was the winning teacher here from Bayport. To listen to her and the programs that she does, and now the type of instruments that they never had that they're going to be able to buy for one of her clubs, is such a cool story.
We love music. I know this about us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, how important do you really think it is for kids to be involved?
Yeah, you know, I think it's important for kids to be involved in any extracurricular activity, to do something beyond school. It's important, whether it's music, it's band, if you're in the plays. I was on the stage crew for this things, just to get involved. And it really, I think it shapes who you are. And I think it helps you get a better sense of maybe what you want to do in life. The more things that you can do outside of the actual subjects, I think, gives you a taste of what you want to do.
I have to tell you, I love Barry Manilow. Since I first heard him on my mom's stereo, and I did get to take piano lessons for a long time, and some of the first songs I learned when I could sort of play a song, Barry Manilow.
The reviews we got on Facebook and from people leaving there, people were all dressed up with the boas. And, you know, it was a heck of a crowd. Yeah, it was just such a fun night.
Thank you to Terry Charles with PMI Entertainment and the Resch Center in Green Bay. Thanks again, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
Barry Manilow has overall donated more than $10 million to support school band directors just like Ashley Segrist of Bayport High School.
Barry Manilow's on his last concert tour this summer. Is he doing this for every show?
Yeah, Lisa, he just had a show in Milwaukee. Alex St. Louis, a band director at Cudahy High School, that's just south of the city, earned a $10,000 grant. Manilow currently has 15 stops on the schedule. Every single one will include monetary support for a high school band director.
Want to learn more? Go to manilowmusicproject.org.
We dreamers have our ways of facing rainy days, and somehow we survive.
They say art and beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but it can certainly be in the ear of the beholder. And Oshkosh's own Lamar Walker is working hard to create that kind of art. New Wisco Weekend's Todd Michaels meets up with the young rapper and singer to talk about his journey in music.
Meet Lamar Walker, better known by his stage name, Lil L.A. Mars.
Freshman year, my teacher jokingly nicknamed me L.A. Mar for fun. Then in my sophomore year, I took that name and put a Z at the end, and I converted it to L.A. Mars. After that, right before junior year, I decided to make a meaning for it, which is L.A. Mars is an abbreviation for Lil Last Alien on Mars. Me being on a higher level in life, knowing how unique I am.
Originally from Milwaukee, Lil L.A. Mars moved to Oshkosh just a year and a half ago, but treasured his time in Milwaukee.
I had a good life. I was in the suburbs the majority of my life in Milwaukee. So it's a small world. It's truly a small world in Milwaukee. You know everybody on every block, on every street, maybe. But then, yeah, like I do not regret living there at all. Like that's my home.
While admitting that Milwaukee is a small world, he also says Oshkosh is a community where everyone knows just about everyone else, and his move to Northeast Wisconsin was not planned.
It was really on a whim because I wasn't planning to come to Oshkosh. My mom and my sisters was already living here for a couple years before me, and I was in a situation with my father and my stepmom, and look where we're at now. So it's like a year and a half later. I've gained so much since, and I do not regret it at all.
Despite music being his passion, Lil L.A. Mars faced skepticism early on. His father told him that music was just a hobby. And rather than discourage him, those words fueled his determination to prove his potential and achieve his dreams.
What's funny about when he said that is that he supported me so much before that. It just led up to him saying that because I was procrastinating. So he had almost every right to say that at that point. I later figured that out, but it did hurt me. It did hurt me a lot. I've talked to him recently and he's proud. Like I can tell he's proud because knowing that his son is actually doing something, not just doing something, he's creating an impact. And I want to say thank you to my dad because, and I have, and I said it in a full video that I've created about it too. If he didn't say that, I wouldn't be this far.
Lil L.A. Mars' interest in music goes way back.
I've been wanting to be a musician ever since I was like six because I was singing since then and I fell in love with the idea of Michael Jackson back in the day. And still to this day, I'm fascinated by everything he does. Like I studied everything about him and I look at it and I use him as a reference in a lot of things that I do, even everyday things sometimes. So it's like my fashion, the way that I speak.
While it might be easy to think of Lil L.A. Mars as just another young local rapper, if you look and listen deeper and longer, you'll find quite a bit more diversity.
I feel like me being diverse is the best thing for me because I always love the idea of being versatile and just bringing back Michael Jackson again. Like he's done it all. Like he basically done every genre. I don't think people realize that Michael Jackson is able to do jazz music and he was doing tap dancing back in the 70s. So that proves like he could do almost every genre if he felt like it.
While he's played smaller gigs and open mics across Oshkosh, he got his first big break last weekend with a show at Oblio's Lounge on Main Street. That show coincided with another big event.
I actually have a new album coming out, so that's also amazing. I do have a few songs out for the album as well as singles, like lead singles, but I'm trying to wait for the actual album to like really push it out and everything. I want to like really hone myself being like the original artist rather than just, oh, he has this style from this guy, this guy, this guy. The influences are there, of course, but it's never me wanting to be that person. It's just my influence is there, but it's crammed up into this one body.
While pondering what's next, Lil L.A. Mars ends up taking a trip back in time and makes a revelation about music in his life.
In the next year and a half, I should be selling out shows in Atlanta because that's my next big move. Because my real plan the whole time before coming to Oshkosh was me leaving to Atlanta. But me being here was just the best thing for me because seeing people in real time supporting who I am. And when I first started in 2017, I started, you know, just by freestyling with friends, like at the lunch table. Just the whole thing about that, thanks to Eric David out there. His name, he just usually go by Mr. Ash back in the day. But it really gets deeper because he gave me my first mic. So he gave me my first Blue Yeti mic and I still have it today. I got a shout out to my older one, Mr. Nowak and Miss Leroy. The teachers that really molded me into being more the musician. I started looking at music in a different way. I don't know how, but it was just, you ever get that spark where something just gets clear out of nowhere? Just like, okay, this is it. You're kind of confused at first. It's like, how come I didn't look at this sooner? Like, how come I didn't visualize the idea of what I really wanted like this sooner? As soon as that day happens, it's like, that's when you know. That's when you truly know that it's about you. It's about what you're trying to do.
You can stream Lil L.A. Mars on Spotify and Apple Music. You can also like and follow him on his socials. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Todd Michaels.
On the corner, some people gathering all around at this coffee shop. Too much going on in this town. Beside this place, the sun says Tuesday, 7 through 9. After a mic in the stage. To showcase talent through the night. They say come in, say something. All is welcome, so feel free. I'm on my way.
When we come back from the break on New Wisco Weekend, Brittany Merlot takes on New Wisco's unofficial state bird, the mosquito. And Conrad Krieger talks to an artist making a big impact on fences throughout Green Bay. Plus, we'll have our cover story on the new executive director of the Oshkosh Public Museum. All coming up on New Wisco Weekend.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the dark.
This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale, shadows, your host. Coming up, Brittany Merlot is taking on the mosquito. All over the city of Green Bay, one can see fence paintings that celebrates, of course, the Packers, but also our city's culture. New Wisco Weekend's Conrad Krieger joins us with a conversation with the artist of those paintings.
Go, Pack, go!
When you're driving down Lombardi Avenue going to a game, you can see paintings on fences. Whether it's Jordan Love or any Packers player, to an actor that has showed love for Wisconsin throughout his whole career. Have you ever wondered how those paintings got there? Well, I talked to an artist who has done some of these paintings, Spencer Young, who shares more details on his company, Forever Young Designs, and where he got his inspiration for these fantastic pieces you can see all over Green Bay.
I kind of wanted to incorporate my last name, which is Young. My parents, who are the most hardest working people like you would ever meet, and instilled like great work ethic, and they have a really great life. You know, I kind of wanted to incorporate that same philosophy into my business and also carry on a legacy. Yeah. So I thought, well, nothing better than Forever Young, you know, and it kind of carries with that tradition where it might work and stand the test of time. No matter like if you're older, if you're younger, I feel like everyone appreciates my artwork, and you know, I'm just kind of blessed that a lot of people do enjoy it. Yeah,
definitely. So what got you interested in starting to do like design work, art, graphic design?
Art has always been a staple in my life. my grandpa was a rustic painter. So okay. he would paint on like saw blades, like birdhouses, pretty much anything that like family and friends would want to hang in their house. He would paint it for them. Cool. So I remember just like watching him at the table and do that. I'm like, well, I'm going to pull up a paper and a pen and I'm going to draw with him. And it was always like friendly rivalry when it came to like drawing. Yeah. And like, I remember being like middle school and he's like, I can't draw with you anymore. I was like, why? And he's like, you're better than me. And I just like, I never do it for the competition. I just enjoy painting with and drawing with my grandpa, you know, and I think he knows. I hope he knew that. Like, that's, you know, the reason like he literally did pave the way for my career and for what I'm doing right now. So I'm, pun intended, forever great, forever young, grateful for that. So
how does it feel like having these paintings so close, you know, to Lambeau? Yeah. You're a Packers fan, I assume?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's so surreal. Like, going back to my grandpa, like, my grandpa was like the biggest Packer fan like I ever knew. And like, he would be grinning ear to ear on a cloud somewhere, just like knowing like, I know that fence and my grandson's painting that fence, which, I mean, it is surreal because it is like, it grew into its own entity. Like, it is part of Green Bay tradition. And to be, you know, associated with that Green Bay tradition is like a tremendous honor. And I can't let the fan base down. So we got to go, go all out every year. So
I think it's cool too, is that there's a lot of people that rent out those houses around there.
Yeah.
You know, coming from anywhere. So they can come and see your paintings like that. So I think that's pretty cool.
Most definitely. Well, and I painted every home game last season, except for the Chiefs game. And I thought that was like a tremendous honor in itself, where I get compliments from Packer fans, which is amazing. But like, to have like the Bears fans come out here and be like, dude, your work is amazing. And it's just like, yeah, I know your team isn't the greatest, but I appreciate the compliment at the same time. So
you got any new fences coming soon? Or
we got
murals?
Some stuff in the works. Yeah. So the iconic Packers fence that I normally paint is going to be my 10th season painting it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's going to be the day before the first home opener, which is September 14th.
Yeah.
I'll be out there all day unveiling a new theme for that fence.
Sweet. Yeah. That's cool.
So, I mean, we got a couple other things in the works too. So I want to keep that on the down low and kind of surprise the fan base when it comes. But trust me, it'll be exciting for everyone.
That was Spencer Young with Forever Young Designs. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Conrad Krieger.
You're listening to New Wisco Weekend on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS.
Mosquitoes have been bad this year. Civic Media's meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins New Wisco Weekend now to tell us why and what we can do to avoid the itch.
Warm weather, humidity, and thunderstorms in Wisconsin bring mosquitoes that bite and annoy us throughout the spring and summer months. In fact, Wisconsin is home to 56 species of mosquitoes. Some of the most common in Wisconsin include the inland floodwater mosquito, the woodland mosquito, and the northern house mosquito. The inland floodwater mosquito, known to scientists as the Aedes species.
The Aedes is the one that sits in the old tires, the flower pots, the barrels, tree holes, stumps, and they can actually remain dormant. Their eggs can remain dormant for up to 5 years. They're there. They're always there. And then when we have high rainfall years, they're going to be more prevalent.
These pesky insects often reproduce in large numbers, especially in wet environments. As it rains, you'll see an increase in the number of these mosquitoes around your house. Floodwater mosquitoes are often aggressive, traveling more than 10 miles from their breeding location to a blood source. And their bite is painful and more noticeable than any other mosquito in the state. They also bite more humans than any other species.
The Aedes genus is responsible for Lacrosse encephalitis and dog heartworm. And then our Culex genus, they're the ones that are responsible for the St. Louis encephalitis and also West Nile virus.
Now that one is the northern house mosquito, the Culex species. This mosquito reproduces in wet, damp areas, including ditches, catch basins, unattended swimming pools, bird baths, ponds, and other standing water areas. Those are the known transmitter of the West Nile virus, making them potentially dangerous to humans if you don't take the proper precautions of protecting your skin with clothes or bug spray. In fact, the first confirmed case of the West Nile virus has bitten Wisconsin. It was found in a blood donor from Washington County and also in a dead bird in Chippewa County. And people who have weakened immune systems are at a higher risk for significant illness. The West Nile virus is spread to humans, birds, and other animals through the bite of these infected mosquitoes, which they acquire from feeding on infected birds.
eliminate any water sources, high moisture areas that you have. Dump those flower pots out. Don't let dog or kitty pools sit. Fill them when you're going to use them and then dump them out. Clean the gutters. Reduce those sources is definitely going to help. You want to still be able to enjoy your yard.
Did you know that mosquitoes live for 2 to 4 weeks as they go through their 4 life cycle stages? Egg, larva, pupa, and adult. The female mosquito lays its eggs on the surface of the water or near it. These eggs will hatch after coming in contact with the water, allowing mosquitoes to easily maintain their species when it's so wet in Wisconsin. Once the eggs hatch, they'll feed and change into pupas once they have enough energy. They'll quickly develop into adult mosquitoes and survive depending on the species and the environmental conditions. And as the mosquitoes feed on blood meals, they'll reproduce and start the cycle over and over again throughout the late spring and summer seasons.
They're definitely worse this year. I mean, we've got so much heavy rainfall. We're a prime habitat for them anyway. So we have the woodlands, the lakes, the streams.
It's been a tough season, whacking these biters with June precipitation picking right up from a waterlogged May. Virtually the entire state experienced wetter than normal conditions, and in some places by large amounts even into July. In fact, this month, Green Bay has already tripled its totals compared to how wet we should be to start August off. So if you're like me, itching those bites right now, here's some ways to get rid of them rapidly. The CDC says wash the bite with warm soap and water, then apply an ice pack for 10 minutes to reduce the swelling and itchiness. Purchasing over-the-counter itch medicine or antihistamine cream can also quickly reduce the effects of a mosquito bite. At home, you can also try mixing baking soda and water together to create a paste that'll help ease the scratch. Or natural oils can help relieve bug bites and pain also. Try peppermint oil, which has a cooling effect on the skin. Tea tree oil can also help rid bacteria, which could cause your bite to become infected. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
On the way, our cover story, an interview with Oshkosh Public Museum Executive Director Anna Canizzo. That's coming up just after the news on New Wisco Weekend.
If you have a New Wisco story you'd like us to share, make sure and reach out to us. Email us at news@wiss.fm or news@wgbw.fm. You're listening to New Wisco Weekend on 97.9 WGBW and 98.3 WISS. Once again, your host, Lisa Hale.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you.
The Oshkosh Public Museum is celebrating 100 years with lots of activities, but also with a new director. Anna Canizzo joins us today. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Anna.
Sure. My background is I received a bachelor's and master's degree from the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee in anthropology with an emphasis in archaeology. And along with that education, I also received a master's level certificate in museum studies. I come to this with a lot of experience, a lot of years, over 25 years for education and experience in the field. Museums feel like home, so it's really a labor of love. I'm honored I get to work in this capacity for the public.
This brings up an interesting question. What makes one say, I want to work in a museum or I want to get into archaeology as a kid? You know, for me, it was always journalism. It was always that I wanted to tell the stories. But what was it that made you say, hey, I want to get into this archaeology thing. I want to get into this history thing.
It started at a very young age. I'm a child of an immigrant. My father is from Sicily, Italy. And so oftentimes I'd go there to visit my family. And at a young age, we were visiting an archaeological site. And so while we were there walking around, I saw these archaeologists working and I was like, oh, I want to do that. That just looks amazing. It's so fascinating. What are they doing? What are they seeing? You know, learning about the past, about my culture. It really sort of ignited that spark initially at a young age. I think I was probably what would be considered a tween nowadays, but at a pretty young age, I saw some archaeologists working in my father's home country, and that really sort of ignited that. So I went into anthropology because they offered the track of archaeology. So anthropology has a number of fields associated with it, including archaeology. So I started there, and I didn't realize that museums were necessarily the route that I wanted to take until a former high school classmate of mine was like, hey, you know, you should reach out to them about doing an internship at the Milwaukee Public Museum. I did one in high school, and maybe you can explore this career. And so I reached out, cold called my mentor at the Milwaukee Public Museum, who's still there and still very influential in my life. And just said, hey, you know, I heard that you offer internships. I would love to do this. And so long story short, I was able to do accredited internship at the Milwaukee Public Museum. And as soon as I landed there and started to engage in the work, in my tasks and my projects, I felt home. And that's such a cliche, because so many museum professionals are like, this is home. And so I really felt it at that moment. I knew. And at that point, there was no waffling for me. I was on a straight path. I actually knew immediately that I wanted to go into collections management. In particular, I loved working with collections. But that great mentor of mine, she really encouraged me to expand and get experiences in other museum areas and departments and environments too, and really explore it to make sure that that's what I wanted to invest in, because that's what your education is, really an investment in your future.
Absolutely.
And so I did, and I came back to it all the time, and that's how I kind of arrived at that threshold of my career.
I love it. How long have you been with the Oshkosh Public Museum?
It'll be 10 years next month. And I arrived here in August of 2014. So as the Durow Curator of Collections and Decorative Arts.
It's not often you get to celebrate a big milestone like this, like 100 years, 150 years. But what do you see as the future for the Oshkosh Public Museum?
Well, we have a bright future. We've had a wonderful legacy and past, and we look to just really continue to build on that to be a place that stewards and interprets history for the area. If you've been past the museum or you've looked at our Facebook page, you know physically we are going under transformation, and it's a job that's never done, is keeping up on such a marvelous historic property. Museum so unique that it is part historic home and part traditional, you know, gallery space, that, you know, we're having this construction done to help, you know, maintain that, this treasure, this community treasure. So on the outside, you'll see a lot of work going on. On the inside, you know, we've been transforming our core galleries steadily since I arrived in 2024. So started with People of the Waters, that opened in 2017, that explores the early history, natural history of the region from the Ice Age, but it stops at the fur trade. So our future is looking towards continuing that story of Oshkosh and the surrounding region in the future with another core gallery. We're also excitedly preparing, hopefully soon, to open our new rotating gallery, the Waldwick Gallery. So we've moved spaces. We, unfortunately, you know, to many people, had to remove a lot of longtime loved exhibitions to make way for exhibits and programs that will serve the next generation and give some of our taxed collections that have been on view for decades, you know, some well-needed rest. Bring out, you know, the museum has a collection of over 250,000 objects.
Wow. And
there's just not enough room to display them all. So, you know, we rotate that. Sometimes we have exhibitions that rotate quarterly or, you know, biannually. And then we have ones that are around for decades, like the beloved Grandma's Attic or the Payne Lumber Company. You know, we know those were treasured exhibitions, but bringing in new core exhibits like This Is Winnebago Land, that explores the deep and rich recreational and sporting history of the region, is an exciting opportunity for this new generation to see other parts of the collection and explore other stories within it. So physically on the inside, we've been turning over these core galleries to serve this next generation. We also look to expanding our service to the community and are building on our capacity to serve the public through these exhibitions, as well as increased programming and events. And we also, you know, in Waldwick, we'll be featuring, you know, rotating exhibitions, some curated in-house from the collection, and then also bringing in really dynamic, appealing exhibitions from the outside that, you know, you might have to travel states over to see. So that's the balance. So there's always something new going on. Some things have been here for decades, some just for a few months, but there's always something exciting to see and explore, as well as increasing our research on the historic home as well. I mean, we've done a ton of research. One of my principal tasks when I arrived to the museum in 2014 was to continue the research of the Tiffany interiors of the museum. And since that time, we've been able to increase our understanding of how rare and unique those interiors are. And this historic home is a very rare treasure globally that we have a deeper understanding of. So there's always something we're adding to and researching and understanding, even the things that have been under our feet for 100 years. So, you know, there's always something going on with that. So we have a bright future, lots of plans to continue on our positive trajectory to serve the public. And so it's exciting. It's always something going on. It's not a dull museum that it, by any stretch of the imagination.
Absolutely not.
Well, and the museum's always been here. You know, it's always been a part of the background. It's part of the community, the fabric of the community. So it's easy to, you know, take it for granted sometimes and just think, oh, you know, it'll always be there. And I think one of the lessons learned in the 1994 fire is that, you know, we can't take history for granted. And, you know, and come see the museum, get a membership so you can come as many times as you want and pay one fee and see what things we have going on. Sometimes it might be a lot, sometimes it might be a little, but there'll always be something new for you to see, or something for new for you to take a second look at and appreciate in another way. So I think that sometimes we've always been here. This place has always been here in people's history. And so it's kind of easy for it to just kind of continue on in the background. But there's a lot of exciting things that are happening behind these brick walls.
Anna Canizzo is the director of the Oshkosh Public Museum.
Like to take a cement fix, be a standing cinema. Dress my friends up just for show, see them as they really are.
This is New Wisco Weekend. We've come to my favorite part of the show, Amanda Nimmer's commentary. This week she takes on therapeutic art in the form of needle felting, because everyone feels better after stabbing something repeatedly.
Throughout this weekend's episode, you've been hearing a lot of interesting stories and different variations of art. But what hasn't been touched yet is a therapeutic art, an art that might be close to the heart for some. And that's going to be finding solace and relief from your anger, your frustrations, your anxiety through needle felting. I bet you weren't expecting that to come out of my mouth. Needle felting. Amanda, what the heck is needle felting? Well, it is a method of creating objects and fabric using a special barbed needle. And here's where the therapeutic part comes from. In order to manipulate these wool fibers into objects, it requires a lot of stabbing. Okay, yes, needle felting sounds like something maybe your great-great-great-grandmother would do, and maybe she has, because needle felting, at least what we know today as needle felting, wasn't invented until the 1980s in California for some reason. And that reason is because a couple didn't know what to do with the excess wool from shearing their sheep. So David and Eleanor Stanwood, finding alternative ways to use the wool, are now credited with inventing what we know today as needle felting. Of course, you can see variations of it throughout history, hundreds upon hundreds of years ago, specifically in the Turkish and Mongolian tribes of the past. But what we do today, the stabbing, is because of David and Eleanor. Now, needle felting can be done by hand or with the help of machines. But the reason I'm discussing the hand version, the hand method for this art form, is specifically for the jabbing and the stabbing. because it gives you the ability to take all of that negative and put that energy into a creation that can be seen in a positive light, whether by yourself or your parents when you show them. Because, of course, they have to say, oh, honey, it's so good. At least if you had good parents, they would. And that negative has turned into a positive. Thus, therapy has been had. So what in the world can you create with needle felting? Well, I'm glad you've asked now that I'm forcing you to be interested. A simple way to start this type of art at home is by using it to make something you'll actually potentially use every day. And that would be to create your own dryer balls. Here's what you need to do. If you go to any kind of store that sells home goods, you'll find those already made dryer balls. They're usually white, black, or gray. Just one color, nothing fun or fancy about them. So you're going to go ahead and buy a pack of those, as well as the barbed needles, the wool, and the protective gloves. Because again, if you've ever been stabbed with something that's barbed, you know that the pulling it out part is not fun. So then you're going to go home and start planning out your design. Here's something simple. A smiley face. Get yourself some yellow wool. Get yourself some black wool. Maybe a little bit of pink or red for like a fun tongue one if you're going emoji style. And start jabbing and stabbing. Because remember, you're taking that negative energy and creating something kind of cute. And if you hate the way it turned out, guess what? They're still useful. They'll still help your dryer. Make your clothes get dry faster. Great for the environment. Better than dryer sheets. And they can permanently live in your dryer and you'll never have to see them again until you do laundry in the next couple weeks or a month, depending what kind of life you choose to live. And that is how you feel the therapeutic good feelings through the art of stabbing and jabbing wool and not another person. Lisa, you can go ahead and cut that out if it's just too far.
Nah, we're all good here.
Oh, okay, good. You heard it from her, folks. From New Wisco Weekend, I'm Amanda Nimmer. And there you go.
Coming up on New Wisco Weekend, Terry Barr takes us on a musical journey where art imitates life. It's the blues, and she's talking with one of the best at his craft. When we return, Terry introduces us to Paul Filipowicz. This is New Wisco Weekend. When I was a painter, I painted you well. Hey! Ron Hobbin! This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Listen to these numbers. 55 years as a Wisconsin-based touring musician. He's working on his 14th album. The 75-year-old taught himself how to play the harmonica and the guitar when he was just a kid. Today, Paul Filipowicz is considered a blues master. He's an honored member of the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame and a brand new inductee into the Wisconsin Blues Hall of Fame in Milwaukee. Our Terry Barr catches up with him to learn why Paul believes he didn't find his art. The art found him.
You're gonna knock your head off. Look out now. I'll tell you about it. Better duck now.
I would like to welcome to the show Paul Filipowicz. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. And we just heard Riding High. What a terrific song. What can you tell me about the song?
One of my favorite songs off of my Unfiltered album. Well, you know, we travel a lot and play a lot, and this was just a tribute to all of the boys in the band. So so it's a mover and a shaker, and it's just a fun song.
Well, and you've been doing this with your band for what, 50 years? Does that sound right? And what keeps you inspired to keep getting out there and doing this?
You know, that's a good question. I'm one of the lucky people that I've known all along this is what I'm supposed to be doing, is playing blues guitar. So, you know, there's a lot of my friends that were guitar players and all that stuff. They say, oh, come on, play a couple country gigs with us. You know, you can make a couple bucks, or come and play some rock and roll gigs. I go, I'm like, well, you know, I'd rather work a day job than do that, because that's not what I'm here. I'm supposed to be playing this other stuff. And yeah, it's my calling. And I remember the first time I heard it when I was a little kid. And I mean, vividly, I can still remember it to this day that it was calling me. And the guys were, I thought, wow, they are playing that just for me. And I still feel that way when I listen to some of that stuff. And then through the years of me growing up and hanging out so I went and saw the live blues that I possibly could, you know, and I still do. But I got to see Muddy Waters. I got to see Howlin' Wolf. I got to see Albert King and B.B. King and Freddie King and everybody. I got to see all those guys. And every time I saw them, they inspired me. It's my calling. And then every once in a while, I'll get pooped out. And then somebody will do something like induct me into the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame. You know, and they did that in 2015. And then that was like a real eye-opener that, you know, like, yeah, I guess you're supposed to be doing this. And then this year, then, which is the Wisconsin Blues Hall of Fame. So
how did that feel, Paul?
You know, it was very interesting that, you know, when they put me in the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame, I didn't think it could get any better than that, you know, because Muddy Waters and all them guys are in there, and we're at Buddy Guy's Club, you know, and all of that stuff. But then when we did this one, you know, it was up in Milwaukee, and I looked at it, and, you know, it's like, it's real. This is real, you know. Yeah. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
I got to ask you about one other one that I read about. So you're in the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame, the Wisconsin Blues Hall of Fame. You have a ton of awards that I think are just amazing. But you were also at one point named the best dressed by the Big City Rhythm and Blues magazine. You are always dressed so great.
2 years in a row.
Oh, wow.
2 years in a row, and that's with everybody in the United States. And that kind of floored me too, because they got all the big shots. I got to get dressed up for my public, you know.
Well, we're glad you do, because not enough people do that anymore. And it just goes so great with your blues music.
Well, it's kind of like I'm a preacher, you know. I can't go to church without my, you know, without my Bible, you know.
So you come from a musical family, too.
Yeah, I come from a musical family. And my dad was he was a trumpet and cornet player in like big bands way long, you know, back before I was born. And my mom taught my sisters how to play piano. And so and we all sang in church. You know, we go to church and sing. And we had an old broke down guitar that my Jaja got for rent for one of his places that he rented. And so that was my first guitar. One of the things I'm really lucky about is that I'm a songwriter too. And I've been a songwriter ever since I was a kid. I would make up songs and all that stuff. And everybody tell me, shut up, Paulie, you know. And I'd be going, yeah, but I got a song here, you know, and so, you know, it pays off because I can, you know, I can come up with songs, you know, I can get inspired and I can come up with this stuff. And I it's the stories of, my life. I tell stories of my life.
Yeah. We are going to leave with the song Brand New Hat. And Paul, thank you so much again for chatting with me.
Yeah. turn my love around.
Thank you for being a part of New Wisco Weekend, your look at the stories and the issues facing Northeast Wisconsin. New Wisco Weekend is produced by Todd Michaels, written and directed by Lisa Hale. Features correspondents Todd Michaels, Terry Barr, Conrad Krieger, Brittany Merlot, and Amanda Nimmer. Special appearances this week by Lil L.A. Mars and Paul Filipowicz. If you have a story you'd like to hear covered, please feel free to email anytime. Lisa.Hale@civicmedia.us. I'm Civic Media Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for New Wisco Weekend on WISS and WGBW News. Be unstoppable.